Our speaker tonight is from the beautiful state of Maine. She's from the Into Action group in Auburn, Maine. Thursday nights, her name is Stephanie K.R. Please, let's welcome Stephanie.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Stephanie. Thanks for having me. I left this morning at 8 a.m. to come here, and it's been quite a little journey. But I don't know that there's anything I'd rather be doing than standing right here. You know, I love this program with parts of my soul I didn't know I had, you know, and the opportunity to do this blows me away. And once I tell you a little bit about what it was like, you'll kind of get it, too. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, you know. I grew up actually just north of Boston, Massachusetts. I'm Irish. I'm Catholic. I'm obviously alcoholic. That's how we roll. You know what I mean? You shake my family tree. We got bottles. We got bodies. We got all kinds of messes coming out of that. And when I was growing up, my dad was actively drinking, and it's all I knew, you know, like it says in the book. My alcoholic life was the only one I knew, and even before I knew that I was alcoholic, before I ever picked up a drink, an alcoholic life was all I knew. And so my dad was a boozer, and my mom, pre-Al-Anon, used to have this thing. My dad would say, you know, oh, I'm going to the store, and that meant I'm going drinking, you know. And so I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and my mom would be like, take Stephanie with you. You know, and that was her attempt to try to get him to come home. Because what nobody in my family realized yet, that this is a disease that once it has you, you can't choose to go home, even if you want to. You know, and thank God this program has taught me that. But so I would go with my dad, and we'd go down the KSC and the CC and the Vets and the Irish American Club. And man, right from the get-go, I loved it. The floors were sticky. The walls were smelly. I got to, like, make my own little Shirley Temples and pull the Lucky Sevens and do the slot machines. And I was, whoa, you know, and I just thought it was awesome. And so my dad and I would roll home, like, midnight, one, whatever. And there's the crazy lady, Mom, at the top of the stairs, hurling his clothes down. What are you doing? Keeping her out? Rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, what is the big deal? Like, we're just having fun. We're not hurting anyone. I didn't get it. You know, I didn't get it. And that was what I grew up in. And that's what everybody I knew grew up in. Like, that's just the neighborhood. And so eventually, somewhere along the line, my mother got Al-Anon. And, we'll get to that when we talk about amends. But so my mom got Al-Anon, and she went to a convention with all her little girlfriends. And so what that meant was that they left us home with the absentee drunk dads. So the dads are off, and we're all like, what is going on with this booze thing? Like, it's causing conflict. It seems to cause parties. Like, I got some guy playing the accordion at my house every weekend and people falling all over. It looked fun. So we decided we're going to see what it's all about. So me and this girl, Sharon, we take a blender. We're at her house. We take a blender and we put in, you know, the 2 shots of this and 2 shots of that and rum and lime liqueur dripping down the sides and brandy and gin and tequila and Zambuca. Yeah, it was good. We didn't want to get caught. Can't get caught. How do you intuitively know that? Like, obviously alcoholic. So we did all that and then we added 2 big scoops of Nestle's Quick. We were young, all right? We were young. Added 2 scoops of Nestle's Quick, which, by the way, does not dissolve in alcohol, evidently, because it's some sort of consistency chemistry thing that I don't really understand. Mixed it all up and drank it. And this is the thing. Oh, my God, it was so good. This is the thing. Oh, it was disgusting. Like, I had powder in my mouth, you know. But for me, what happened was I drank it. And it went down my throat and into my soul. And it's like I have this alcohol chakra in the middle of my being. And when it hit my alcohol chakra, it shot out to every fiber of my being, like my fingertips and my toes. And it was like, bam! And it was on. Like, suddenly the switch had been flipped. And it was okay now. Like, I got it. It was like, oh! It was just like breathing. And I loved it. I loved that feeling. And I chased that feeling. I don't know that I ever felt that feeling again. But man, did I chase it. You know, and right away I had that woo, you know, and I looked like Cindy Crawford and I could dance like Janet Jackson and I was just so darn funny. I was. And I was all that. But right away the consequences started. Immediately the consequences started. And I'm one of those people that I didn't get into trouble every time that I drank. But every time I got in trouble, I had been drinking, you know, every time. And so that night, Sharon and I, what are we in, like 7th or 8th grade? We're ridiculous, you know. We thought it would be a good idea to go up to this house up the street where Tommy and Eddie, the twins, lived. They were very, very cute. And we decided we wanted them to come out and hang out with us. So we go on up and we're hucking beer cans at their windows. Their dad was the chief of police. He did not appreciate this behavior. Right? So immediately I'm that girl that you're not allowed to hang out with, and I'm grounded every summer of my life starting then. You know, and that's how my drinking went. And at first, you know, yeah, it was funny, and I drank on the weekends, I drank with my friends, and it was all the ha-ha. You get the calls the next day, oh, you threw up on the dog, oh, you took your shirt off, you made out with him, or her, you know, like, whatever. Hey! Once I'm drinking, anything's a good idea, you know? And so it did that, you know, but this disease has a progression. And the progression of the disease for me, like it is for a lot of women, was really freaking fast. And yeah, sure, there are outside substances that came into play. Because if you can give me something that I can do that lets me stay up for 3 or 4 days in a row and drink nonstop and drink a fifth of vodka like it's water, give me two. You know, like I want it because I am a pig when I drink. I am. I just want more. I can't get enough. I am that girl that's going around the next morning after the party. I'm still up. I'm shaking the beers to see which one has less cigarette butts in it so I can drink it. Oh, you know you did it. You know. You know. And I'm drying out the cigarettes on the side, too. I gotta. Like, it was not pretty. You know, so meanwhile, I'm living at home because, of course, I'm fairly unemployable and pretty useless generally as it goes, and thinking I'm all that at the same time. Like, who do you think you are? My poor mother. Again, we'll get there when we talk about amends. And my mother, she's got this whole Al-Anon thing going on, and so I get home, and there's 44 questions taped to the toilet, and there are big books all over the house, and she's chasing me around, and she's all, you had enough yet? You know, and I'm like, no. I'm going out. Give me some money. And like, that's how I did it. I was this self-will, run, riot, tornado of destruction. That's how I was. And I didn't get it. I couldn't see it, you know? My dad stopped drinking at some point during this whole mess. I don't know when, but he did. And I didn't. And so one night what I did was I stole the Al-Anon treasury, you know? Because my mom was the treasurer, because she's getting active. So I stole her little Ziploc baggie full of money, and I went down. Because what I like to do is I like to play the big shot. And then I go down to the bar with my little baggie of money, and I'm all like, set everybody up. Woo, this is on me. I had like $8. I had to make amends for that later because she blamed my drunk dad. And I just let it slide for several years, even into sobriety. You know, so at some point in my life, you know, I'm drinking in high school, blah, blah, blah. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. Y'all know what it's like. I go see my high school guidance counselor when I'm a junior in college, and she says to me, you know what? You're not college material. Oh, man, talk about resentment. I'm not college material. Who does she think I am? She is, you know. Doesn't she know who I am? She was right. I wasn't going to school very much. I certainly wasn't applying myself. So she told me I wasn't college material and that my best bet was to get a good job and try to find a husband. Yeah. There's some good advice. It wasn't all that. Well, it was a long time ago, but whatever. So basically what that meant for me was after I graduated from high school, I went from puking in Pontiacs to puking in Porsches because I got a job at a law firm. So then, you know, I started dating lawyers, and I was just jumping out of their cars and stealing their stuff and getting in trouble. And it progressed, and it progressed, and it got worse. And, you know, what happened for me was that little by little I started doing those things that I swore that I would never do. Little by little I started doing things against my will, and I started doing things that were sucking my soul out from the inside. You know, I did those things that the next morning when the phone rang, I didn't want to answer it anymore. I didn't care who had been at the bar. I didn't want to know. I didn't remember being there, and I just didn't want to hear about it. I just wanted a drink. So towards the end of my drinking, I'm drinking at a bar in Chelsea, Massachusetts. Very fun place, a nice establishment. There are bars on the windows. They come around every so often to pat us down, make sure we don't have weapons. You know, it's the early 90s. I'm sporting a side ponytail, you know, thinking this is all fun and games, thinking, hey, what do you want to do tonight? Oblivious, you know, oblivious. And, of course, as a man, because I always take these hostages, because if I'm going down, I'm bringing as many people as I can with me. And so there's a hostage, and his name was Joe. And I had heard my mother babble about this Al-Anon long enough, you know, and I knew what alcoholism was, and I didn't think that I had anything to do with it. But I told him, I said, Joe, you're an alcoholic. Your drinking is making my life unmanageable. And you need to get help. Or I'm going to break up with you. Right. Now, meanwhile, you know, by this time, I'm going to the bar every day in my sweatpants and sweatshirt. I'm not bothering to shower. Brushing my teeth is totally optional. So I'm a real catch. And he just said, basically, well, all right, see ya. And like, we broke up. And then it really got bad for me. And I don't speak about a lot of it from the open podium. If any women want to talk about it, or men, whatever, I'll tell you. But at that point, I began to drink at him. And I began to drink at my life. And I began to drink and do things that were absolutely dehumanizing as a woman and as a human being. I do not regret those things anymore or wish to shut the door on them. And they were bad. But eventually, you know, because I got a little of this codependent thing going on. And so eventually Joe calls and he's like, you're right, baby, I can't live without you. Come back to me. And I'm like, okay, honey, you come home and it'll be okay. You know, and of course we both lived at home. We couldn't actually go to any home because we couldn't afford a home. But we were both living at our parents, you know. And so I asked my mother, there was a meeting, and we went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we sat in the middle, and I listened for him. It had nothing to do with me. I was Stephanie. I was there for support. They welcomed me. I'm like, thanks. You know, I thought they said, keep coming back. I'm like, oh, I will. You know, the women especially, I think they could smell the booze on me. And they're like, Stephanie, keep coming. And I'm like, okay. And I thought that they just thought I was so awesome. Like, I was such a power of example because I was so young. They just wanted me back. They could see I was crazy sick. Crazy. So I'm sitting in the middle of the meeting and I'm nudging him and I'm like, oh, sweetheart, you should get him to be your sponsor. He's got that same character defect. See, look, I made a list of yours here, you know. No, like, I'm not kidding. Like, I'm not kidding. And eventually Joe stopped coming to the meetings. Like, I don't know where he went, but I kept coming and I was not drinking because I'm going to be a good woman. I'm going to be a good power of example and I'm going to support my man because that's what a good woman does. And so I'm coming to these meetings, and then I'd go home after the meeting, and I'd call him at the bar and tell him what was said that was relevant to his life and how it could help him. I am at this point so oblivious to myself, God calling, so oblivious to myself that I don't even know this has anything to do with me, you know, and I kind of laugh about it now, but it's not funny. My happiness was so dependent on another human being. I believed that in order for me to be happy, he needed to be sober. He needed to treat me the way I wanted to be treated. He needed to buy me a house with a white picket fence. He needed to give me those things. He needed to emotionally support me. He needed to fix me and make me happy. Nobody can do that. And I didn't know that. And I watched, you know, I learned at home, but whatever. So I'm doing all that, but at the same time, I'm not drinking when I'm coming to these meetings, you know. And I see all the women and y'all showering and being nice to each other, and I'm like, I'm not down with that. I don't know what's up with that. Not down with the women. Nope. Maybe in that way, but not in that way. And so I'm just kind of lost my things out there. Sorry. So I'm coming to these meetings and I'm listening. It doesn't have anything to do with me, but I'm not drinking, right? And I go to this party in November of 92, and I'm walking in and I'm like, and I liked not drinking. I liked it. And during the time that I was coming to meetings for him, I had experienced that I got a drink itch. You know, when you find yourself in a room and suddenly your skin is on fire, you don't know what you want to do, you're totally pissed off, you have no idea why, and it feels like the Incredible Hulk is coming out. I did not feel like that at this juncture. So I went to this party in November, and I'm walking around, and I'm like, Stephanie, I'm not drinking. The Bruins were on. People don't care if I'm not drinking. Like, they really don't care. But I do, right? It's all about me. Everybody's looking at me when I walk in. Nobody cares. So I go in, and I'm like, I'm Stephanie, I'm not drinking. I walk into the kitchen. This guy Jimmy's standing there, and he holds out a drink, and he says, do you want a screwdriver? And I'm thinking in my head, because I don't feel like the Incredible Hulk tonight, I'm thinking in my head, no, I don't. Like, I don't want a drink. And out of my mouth came yes. Out of my mouth came yes, because if I am not in fit spiritual condition, I cannot physically be around alcohol, or I will drink it. You know, and in that time that I've been coming around here and I've been listening to the women, oh, matchy, matchy, nicey, nicey, I had listened to the things that they had done, you know, and they had lost husbands and kids and beaten people and been beaten. And I was so judgmental and such a twit, just ego, ego, pride, pride. And I had thought, if I was ever like that, oh, I would get sober too. If I was ever that bad, I'm not like them. Well, you know, my God is amazingly gentle and gracious sometimes. And sometimes my God kicks me hard. And that night, God knew what I needed. And that night, I did a bunch of the things that I had heard women in this program talk about doing. And I did them without a second thought. And I was further disgraced and dehumanized as a woman and as a person. I ended up, I drank that drink. I got drunk. Shocker. I ended up at the Golden Banana on Route 1, which is another really classy establishment. I was asked to leave after I got on stage with the male dancers because I thought that they wanted my phone number. I was wearing those same green sweatpants, and I was asked to please not return. I came out of a blackout at 10 o'clock at night on the payphone with my mother, talking to her. And I don't ever, like, when I start to talk about this, it gives me goosebumps, and I hope it always does, because I came out of that blackout, and I was on the phone with her, and I started saying, Mom, what's wrong with me? Like, why can't I not drink? Why am I so broken? Like, what is it about me that is so defective and damaged that I am unlovable and disgusting and ugly and gross? And all she said to me was, don't drive and come home, and it'll be okay. I didn't. I got home eventually. Got home within a few days. I don't know when. But when I woke up, when I came to after that little episode, I woke up in my bed at my mother's. No clue how. Seriously, no clue how. Like, that's disturbing. And I looked, and on the nightstand, there was a shot glass and a cue ball, because I stole shot glasses and cue balls. And it was sitting right there when I opened up my eyes. And I thought, I can't do this anymore. I'm 23 years old, and I can't do this anymore, you know? And so I went back to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went for myself. And I was still clueless and crazy and egotistical and not so, but it was a start, you know? And so my sobriety date is November 14th, 1992. And by the grace of God, wicked directive sponsorship and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as well as the fellowship, I haven't had to have a drink since. And that's a miracle. That's a miracle for this alcoholic. When I got here, even though I got here and I, like, was broken and beaten and hurt, like, my hair hurt. Like, it was just like, That's how I felt. When I came, I was so raw. I was so raw, and I was such a little girl. And I was so hurt. And when I got here, I still didn't think that I was an alcoholic. I certainly wasn't powerless over alcohol, and my life wasn't unmanageable. Still, it was you all. You know, didn't you know? My mother was overbearing. My father never told me he loved me. Oh, that's something to drink on for a few years. You know, my boyfriends did not treat me like the princess that I am. My girlfriends were backstabbing tramps. I'm okay. You all are the problem, the people in my life. You know, but my God is really, really gentle and has allowed me to see my character defects and my part in it all exactly when I'm supposed to. Unfortunately, not a minute before, which means I continue to be human. Oh, well. So I came around to meetings, and I got sober in my hometown, so where my dad had drank. And so I walked into a meeting, and, of course, all the guys from the KSE and the CC and the vets, they're all there, the bartenders and everybody, because now they're all sober. And I walk in, and they're like, Stephanie, are you here with your dad? And they're, like, looking over my head to see my dad, and I'm like, no. And they're just like, oh. And it was good, because these guys who I thought, I mean, they were maybe 40 or 50, and I thought they were old. You know, for real, I'm like, oh, my God, I got to hang out with these old guys. These old guys totally took me under their wing, and they were like, no holds barred, sit down, shut up, you're spreading the mess, you don't have a message, just stop, which is what I needed, because I was a freaking princess when I got here, and I do not need a tiara, you know, I do not need to nurture my inner child, I need to beat the bugger down, for me. And so I came here and those guys totally took me under their wing, you know, and they would make me sit up front and they wouldn't let me talk to the guys, which is all I wanted to do. Not gonna lie, right? One of my very first jobs when I got sober was I was the chip girl, and I was really excited about that because the new boys would come up to get their chips and I would give them their chip and then I would give them my phone number because by now I was 2 or 3 months sober. In case they wanted to talk about the big book, we could get together and talk about the big book. Because I had sobriety, and I needed to give it away to keep it. That's not what I was giving away. Hello. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Yeah. So, you know, these guys, though, man, they kept it real. You know, they kept it so real for me. I wouldn't show up to the meeting, right? The Monday night morning side was my home group. They took away the chip club, and I had to make the coffee, which was so humiliating because, first of all, whenever I would carry the big coffee pots, invariably the spigots would open, and I would be covered in water, and it looked like I wet myself, and I'm just like, ah! And people would come in with, like, Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, immediate resentment. Like, I know she got that coffee just because she knows I'm the coffee maker here. She just doesn't want to drink my coffee. Why does she think she's so much better than me? Who is she? Huh. You know? Really? So I'm the coffee maker, and if I didn't show up to my home group or if I didn't show up to a commitment or whatever, you know, these guys would call me, and they'd be like, Stephanie, where are you? I'd be like, oh, Charlie, I have cramps. Because usually you talk about those kind of girl issues. Men flee. This guy, I will never forget what he said to me. He's like, yeah, you'd be drinking if you had cramps. Click. Whoa. I was at that meeting within 10 minutes in those same green sweatpants. I did. I had these green sweatpants and this Notre Dame sweatshirt that, like, it had holes in the sleeves so I could put my thumbs through and so I could just wipe my snot. It was really nice. I was like, oh, poor me. I'm only 23 and I have to be sober. You know, and they'd be like, shut up. I spilled more than you drank. I'm like, well, then you don't know how to drink, you know. And they'd say to me, oh, you're so lucky you got sober so young. I'm like, you're so lucky you got to drink for 40 years. I got eight. Keeping it now. Didn't get it then. You know, and I came around, I started taking the suggestions. And for me, this program has been miraculous, and this program has been so gentle, I think, because God knows I am a wuss, and I can't handle anymore. And so all the time, things are getting put in my path, you know, and I have all these God instances. So, like, I'm going to school. Well, of course, I get a sponsor. They say, find someone who has what you want, do what they do. So I find this woman. She's totally beautiful. She's got a wicked hot husband, really nice car, great clothes. I'm like, I want that. Like, literally. So I asked her to be my sponsor. Pretty sure I said inappropriate things to her and probably to her husband, too. You know, whatever. That's how I was rolling back then. But I was willing to do what she did, and she was a principled woman. And God did that because I couldn't see that at that point. You know, God put her there for me. And I was right up her butt 24/7 because I didn't know how to live sober. I didn't know how to do anything sober. I didn't know how to date sober. I didn't know how to go to work sober. I didn't know how to talk to people sober. Like, why would you do anything sober when there's alcohol? I don't understand that, which is why I evidently need to keep coming here. And so I would be, like, right up her butt all the time, and I'd show up at her house literally at, like, 9 o'clock in the morning and be like, hey, what are we doing today? And she'd be like, I'm going grocery shopping. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I'd go with her because I didn't even have a car. So I'd walk to her house, and then I'd just go wherever she went, basically. And so finally she said to me, Stephanie, why don't you take a class or something? And so I started going back to school on the side, you know, and I kept coming to meetings. And I wasn't super employable when I first got sober. But I kept having these little God instances, right? These little God incidents. And one of them was, like, I'd be driving to school, and I'd be so, like, early sobriety. Like, if you're in early sobriety, yay for you. Seriously, like, just write a lot of stuff down, because in a couple of years when you read it, you will seriously almost wet yourself. Like, just write it down. So I'd be driving to school, and I'd be mad at everything. You know, I'm always mad at everything because I'm such the queen bee. And so I'd be driving to school or whatever, and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to be late, it's all their fault, da-da-da-da-da, and I didn't do this because they told me this, and da-da-da-da-da. And all of a sudden I get cut off by someone and be like, honk if you love Bill Wilson. And I'd be like, are you kidding me? You know, really? Like all the time. My car would suddenly pull into a package store. In Massachusetts, you had to have package stores, like liquor stores. So my car would like suddenly pull into Doherty's package store up on Main Street. And then what happens? Like old Scotty or Charlie or one of these old guys from the meeting is like walking by to go to CVS. And they're like, hey, Stephanie, gonna see you tonight? I'm like, uh-huh. So grateful to be sober. Yay. Really, like it wasn't all that. Like I played a lot of Nintendo my first couple years, you know. And basically what I did was I hooked up with a bunch of people my own age or like between 20 and 30, and like I didn't even drink coffee till I got here, right? Now I have a Starbucks card and a Dunkin' Donuts card. Like I'm such an addict in anything I do. But so basically what we'd do is we'd get up, we'd go to a morning meeting, we'd drink coffee, we'd go to a noon meeting, we'd drink coffee. We would go to a nighttime meeting, maybe two, drink coffee, and then go to Bickford's and get chocolate chip pancakes. Then go home and call each other on the phone all night, you know? I mean, and so that's how it went for a long time. All I did was go to meetings. And I had this sponsor who went through the first 164 pages of the big book, and what she did was she put my hand into the hand of God, absolutely, without a doubt. And I read a lot of things in that big book, and I thought, no, because I was brought up Catholic. And I'm like, I ain't got time for this, you know? And now I can stand here and honestly say that the most important thing to me today is my relationship with God. And that is something, God works in my life in ways that I know. Like, I know God to be there. I trust in this process, and I trust in my higher power more than I trust anything. Not to say that I don't take my will back on a regular basis, but I trust it like nothing else. And there is no way 18 years ago I thought I would stand up here and ever admit that to a bunch of people. What are they going to think of me if they know I like God? Whatever. Like, it's totally working for me. And my God is huge. Huge. So we started working the things, and eventually I came to see that I'm absolutely powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable. Because whenever I find a person, place, or thing unacceptable, it's a spiritual axiom that there's something wrong with me. I keep waiting, you know? I keep waiting for that justified anger, for that justified resentment. There isn't one. There isn't one. And I'm like, this time, I am right. My sponsor laughs. She's like, Stephanie, you can be happy or you can be right, and go right about it, you know? Because every single time something makes me upset, it's me. I haven't said no when I meant no, or I said yes when I meant no, or whatever. It's always me. It's my expectations. It's my ego. It's my pride. It's my lack of trust in God. But it is always me. And I couldn't see that in the very first, right? Because when we were first working the steps, like I can remember when I was first going to step meetings with her and everything, and we were on like step two or three, but they were all up to amends. And I legit, when they came around, I'm like, I'm Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic. I don't really need to make any amends because I didn't hurt anyone because I'm so young. Thank you. You know? And they're like, yeah, keep coming. But my God didn't let me see a lot of the hurt I had caused either. And I believe that that is God, because had I been able to see the amount of devastation and destruction that I had caused and the pain and feel it at the level I feel it today, I never would have stuck around. And the first couple times I worked my steps, it was on an intellectual level. I understood my parents did the best that they could with what they had, and I forgave my dad, and I understood this, and I love my mom. The next few times I did it, I started to feel it here. You know, it moved from my head to my heart. It moved to a place where I could have compassion for that eight-year-old little girl who had to go to those bars and know that that was not a safe place for me to be, and feel the pain that goes with that, and also the forgiveness. That is God. Because I don't even know what any of that means, left to my own devices. You know, and so I've always had really directive sponsorship, and I've been told to do what she does, and I do. I got a home group, like I said. I had the little coffee maker job for a really long time. And eventually I started working on that fourth step. Ooh. You know, it ain't no thing. Like, it really isn't. Like, all the stuff that I wrote down on my fourth step about the resentments that I had and the reasons why I hated myself and the stuff I would take to my grave and my sex inventory and my fears, That was all the stuff I drank over, drank at, and beat myself up for years. The hardest thing I have done in this program is to forgive myself, to put myself first on that freaking resentment list and first on that amends list. Like, I know, like, I'm going to have people come up to me after, because whenever I talk about this, they're like, this isn't a selfish program. You should put others first. Whatever. Like, rock it. Like, this is where God has me today, and I trust it. I trust it because my life is second to none. So, you know, I did that fourth step, and I did a fifth step. And my sponsor, right, because you have all those things. I just love AA. So, I do. So you have all those things that you don't want to say. And so I said them to my sponsor, and I was totally afraid. She's like, yeah, whatever. You know, and she said, go take the book. She goes, read the first five propositions. Make sure you left nothing out. Make a list of the defects of character and then get down on your knees and humbly ask God to remove those defects of character, because I can't remove them. This is what I do because I'm a crazy control freak, codependent whack job. I try to fix stuff. I can't fix it. That's what God does. I just stay out of the way. You know, I know what triggers me and I recognize it today. And how do I do that? Because I do a 10th step on a daily basis. You know, every day I write down everything that bothers me, because if it bothers me, it's something about me. There's some aspect of fear that is preventing me from being maximum use to God. And that is unacceptable to me today, because God carried me through that wreckage and allowed me to rebuild my family and life. And I now owe it to God and to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be as good as I can possibly be, because it was so freely given me. And it needs to be here because, quite truthfully, somewhere along the line, I ended up marrying this guy in the program because, of course, I go to a speaker meeting, right, and I'm a speaker at a group. And there's a cute boy there, but by now I'm 2 years sober, so it's okay. And he was cute, and he thought I was cute. No, you know, love and AA. So we got married. Well, actually, it was a long time between then and there, but we started dating and all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, I'm still going to school, and I get myself a bachelor's degree, and I got myself a master's degree, and then I'm going off to Kansas to get a PhD, because I'm evidently good at school when I'm not wasted. Who knew? I also don't have a weak gag reflex. I always thought I had a really weak gag reflex because I was vomiting everywhere all the time, drunk and sober. Turns out I was just wasted and hungover, because I don't vomit barely at all anymore. I'm also not totally covered in bruises because I'm not nearly as uncoordinated as I once thought I was. All gifts of sobriety. So I go to Kansas to get this degree, and this guy comes with me, you know, and we eventually get married, and it was a good thing. You know, we're divorced now. We were together for like 13 years, and it was awesome. It was really good. And on the day that I married that man, even though we're divorced, on the day that I married that man, I have no doubt that it was exactly the right thing that I was supposed to be doing. Exactly. Oh, my God, did I love him. Oh, my God, I still kind of do. Not in any unhealthy, freaky way, but, you know, I wish him well. He's remarried. We have these two fabulous kids. You'll hear about them, too. But what happened was, when I had been coming around, there had been this old guy, George, when I was at these meetings. And even though these guys were wicked crotchety and totally mean, they were also really sweet. I mean, they saved me, and they knew it, and I didn't. And I used to go into this meeting, and I would have my head down, and I couldn't look up. And every time I would come in, this guy, George, would say, "Here comes the prettiest little girl in AA." Every time. I couldn't even look at him in the face. "Here comes the prettiest little girl in AA." And I just felt so ugly still. I felt so unworthy. I knew, like, I wanted to try this program so much, and I wanted to do it, and I wanted you to like me. But I knew that every time I had tried anything or wanted anything, I had screwed it up and dropped the ball and disappointed people every time. And I didn't want this to be like that. And he'd just say, "Here comes the prettiest little girl in AA." And it would kill me. But I loved it so much. Like, you do not know how many times that got me going back to the meeting. And then, so George and I, that's the ex-husband, we go to get married, right? So we came back home to Massachusetts to get married. He was from Billerica. I'm from Winchester. All our bridesmaids and groomsmen are in the wedding, are in the program. His dad's in the program. My mom's in the program. My sister's in the program. My niece is sober. Well, she was only 9 then, but she's sober now. But everybody's freaking sober, you know? So we're at a meeting the night before our wedding. I'm at a meeting, you know? Like, who would have thought it? I'm at a meeting with, like, all these people who I love, who I know what love is, and who I am there for, and who are there for me. Do you know that I got a half a dozen women who would fly across this country if I picked up the phone? Wow. Wow. I am a backstabbing, nasty tramp when I drink. And now I'm not. But so we're at this meeting the night before I get married, and George is chairing the meeting, you know, and I'm like, yes, it's George. And I hug him, and I'm like, George, it's so good to see you. And, you know, I'm kind of like proud of myself because I'm actually still sober. I'm like 7 or 8 years sober now. I'm like, look, I didn't even drink yet, you know. And he's like, good, good, good. And I go and I sit down, and this new girl walks in. And he says, here comes the prettiest little girl in AA. I know. And, like, for me, it was absolutely like I lost it. I just started bawling. And I am so grateful that there are people in this program and in this world that are like George that will say things like that. And I am so grateful that that night I didn't need to be the prettiest little girl in AA anymore. Because you all gave me God. And God has shown me that I am beautiful exactly the way that I am. Like, I don't need to be anything but this. You know how freaking cool that is? Like, the pressure is off. It's like, oh, this is it. This is what you get, you know? So I married that guy, and we had these two fabulous children, you know? And my kids are 6 and 9 now, and because I do daily prayer meditation and continue to practice these principles in all my affairs, as well as carry this message to a million women, and men sometimes too, in very rare and particular circumstances. Not often. Yeah. It's just like, really? I got a text tonight. Hey, sexy, want to go through the big book with me? I'm like, really? Really? No, thanks. I'm all set. I'm like, call Rob. But because of that, I get to experience these kids' lives, even though we're divorced. Like, so we've been divorced like 4 years. He's remarried. Like, whatever. We don't fight about money. We don't fight about anything. Because why? Why? We have these miracles. We are both sober. He's sober. I'm sober. His new wife's sober. Everybody's sober. We're all happy. We all go to the same meetings. Like, it would be awkward if we were all just weird. So why bother? You know, we put those kids first. We work out schedules that work for the kids, you know? And I can be there for my kids today. And the thing, like, one of the things that happened a couple years ago when my little son started playing T-ball. So, of course, I go to every game because I am that mom. And so I go to his game, right, and he goes to get up at bat. And he gets up behind the bat. He's got the little big bobblehead helmet thing on, right? And he's so cute. I have pictures. But so he goes to get up. And he looks up in the stands, you know, and he looks for me. And he has eye contact with me. And I can see him visibly relax. And he can focus on what he's there to do. And he can be 8 years old. I didn't have that. I don't care anymore. You know, I've worked through it. But I can give that to them. You know, the fact that they are 6 and 9, and if they hear, like, hell on the radio, they're all like, oh, mama, that's a bad word. You know, they think shut up is a bad word. Good. They know that when they're angry, they can pray to God. I'm their mom. Like, it's crazy. I mean, it's awesome, but it's obviously God. Because left to my own devices, and this is another God incident, this is what would happen. Last month in July 17th, I woke up. And I heard this little girl crying outside my window. And she's like, mommy, mommy, where are you? Mommy, mommy, come back. I'm like, what is going on? I grab my cell phone, run downstairs, call 911. I'm like, there's this little girl outside, nothing but a T-shirt, wandering up and down the street yelling, where's her mom? I take the little girl into my house. I give her a Sunny D. I give her some clothes. I put her in front of Kim Possible because I know that she likes these things because I like these things. And so I do that. And I keep her in my house while her mother comes home wasted and gets arrested. Right? And so then I let this little girl go, and I write about it, because that's what I do on my 10th step. I write about my day, and I look at my interactions, and I say, why did God put me here? What is being revealed? And I look at that interaction, and I think to myself, if I was a drunk mother, that would be me. I cannot think I am any better than that girl, because I know if I wanted to use or if there was a man involved, I would leave those kids. I know it. I was blessed enough to have them in sobriety. I am not crazy enough to think I wouldn't just leave them, you know? So a couple weeks later, you know, I'm sponsoring a billion girls and they're all sponsoring girls. And I got this one calling me. She's sponsoring her first girl. You know, I'm telling her, go out and talk to women and get their numbers and try to get them to come to a meeting. You know, just give them your number. So she's texting back and forth with this girl, texting back and forth. The girl she's texting back and forth with is the woman from across the street who the night after she got arrested went to a meeting and met the woman that I sponsor. And so that Friday night when we were supposed to go to a meeting, the two of them walk up my driveway. And this girl is in tears. And she's like, I can't believe I did this and I'm not a bad mom and I can't believe what you must think about me. And I could hug her and I could say, forgive yourself. Just forgive yourself. I would have done it too. God loves you, and you can be a good mom. You know, she's 2 weeks sober. I don't know what's going to happen to her. I have no idea. But I know that I did my part. I know that I suited up and I showed up and I was present and I said what I was supposed to say because I prayed. Because I didn't let it get to be about me. And when we sat on my back porch and had a pot of coffee, I sat there and I didn't say anything while my little sponsee babbled her little head off to this girl about how great the bride was and how fun it was and the steps are so great and it's going to change her life. And I didn't say anything because I don't need to correct it. If it's wrong, I don't need to fix it if I think it's broken, because God is there. God is there as long as I stay out of it. You know? And so I've been given this life that is absolutely, positively second to none because I worked those steps in the order. And I had to make amends. So, of course, we got the whole amends thing because I got the bag of money. So I go back to my mother. And I had already done the whole amends about, you know, I'm sorry I, you know, hit you. I'm sorry I stole other things from you. I'd never owned up to the Al-Anon treasury, though. I didn't. Because she's blaming my dad. I'm like, that's all good, right? So eventually when I got a little bit more honest and a little bit more thorough, I realized, oh, it was me who took that money. And I went to her, and I did what it says in the book. I said, yeah, I did this. I'm sorry I lied about it. What can I do to make it up to you? What can I do to make it right? Right? She says, you can keep, you know, she crying. Oh, you can keep doing what you're doing. I love you so much. I'm so proud of you. Blah, blah, blah. And you can come to my Al-Anon anniversary with me. I'm like, oh, yay. And so for about 5 years, I went to my mother's Al-Anon anniversary with her every year when they had their big group anniversary. And she dragged me around and she said, this is my daughter, Stephanie, and she's sober and she's an Alcoholics Anonymous. People are like, uh-huh. But she was just so proud as punch. And that's what I do. You know, the living amends that I make to my mother is I suit up and I show up. The weekend of Roundup on Sunday morning, I got a call saying that my mother she'd been rushed to the hospital and she had fluid and heart issues and blah, blah, blah. I called her up and I said, Mom, I'm coming down. And she said to me, okay. And I went down and I did what a daughter does. You know, she didn't need me. Like, she was okay. She was home within a couple days, but I was there. I was there when she woke up because God knows none of my other absentee family was. But, you know, they do the best they can with what they have. But I was there. I cleaned her room. I changed her sheets. I put flowers in her room because that's what my mother likes. And it's about my mom. It's not about me, you know. And that morning at the convention when I had found out, I went into the hall and I had to find out because I was supposed to get my kids. But my ex-husband and his wife were there. And I saw his wife. You know, and I'm like, Sharon, my mom's in the hospital. She hugged me. The two of us started crying. And she said, don't worry about it. We got the kids. Like, that's it. Like, that's God. Like, that is my life. You know, so obviously I got this PhD at Kansas, which is kind of crazy because I kept going to school. And I just don't stop until someone ever said stop going. So I just kept going. I'm like, all right. Which really worked out well because now I have this thing that they call a job, which I call a scam. Like, what I got going on should be illegal, right? So I'm teaching up at Bates College. I have tenure, which means they can't fire me. They give me every seventh year off paid, right? I'm just like, really? Really? This is my life? Me. I was incapable. I was not college material. And now I'm teaching at one of the most prestigious colleges in the country. It's not me. I didn't do anything. My sponsor just wanted me out of her hair. So, like, take a glass. You know, but that's God. And I have no doubt that that's exactly where I'm supposed to be because I see these young women and sometimes young men, but usually young women. And I say, you know, I used to drink just like you. Do you want to get a cup of coffee? You know, and I can talk to them about things and I can be a power of example and I can be a role model for someone who doesn't drink. Like, because we are not a glum lot. You know, a couple years ago, I bought that house with a white picket fence and I bought it for myself. And that was huge. Huge in my personal recovery, you know, and I walked into that house after I got the keys and I sat down and I cried because I understand today that I am okay and I don't need any other human being. Y'all might help to make it better, rock on, but I don't need you all and you all can't keep me sober and I can't keep you sober or get you sober, but that comes from God. And I do know that if I continue to do the things that I've always done, I will continue to get what I always get, which rocks. Yeah, for real. So what I do is in the morning when I get up, I make my bed, because today I'm a woman of dignity, grace, and deliberateness. I don't always make the best choices, but they're choices. And whatever, you know, I'm human. But dignity, grace, and deliberateness. And I make my bed, and I spend a lot of money on my sheets, because for this alcoholic, I had a lot of bad things happen in, on, surrounding, or concerning beds. Those things don't happen anymore. They don't. Ugh, so good. And then I go in and I brush my teeth. And every time I brush my teeth, I get down on my knees, because I used to forget to get down on my knees when I first got sober, and I kept panicking I was going to drink if I didn't get on my knees. Oh, my God, I'm going to drink! So they told me to associate it with someone. I threw all the shoes under the bed. That didn't help, because now that I had disposable income, I was buying a ton of shoes. So I do it when I brush my teeth. And now that I'm sober, I brush my teeth at least twice a day. And I always brush my teeth before I'm going to see people, which is exactly when I need God. Because left to my own devices, wandering around my own little house, I do okay. It's just when I have to deal with you all that it gets dicey. So I brush my teeth. And then I read some sort of meditation or something from the literature. And I try to ask God to please let me be of service. During the day, I try to say yo to God 3 times. Just yo. Just yo. Because I'm like a snowball, man. Once I get going, I get momentum. And I'm like all kinds of self-will. And everything's going to end. If he doesn't go out with me, well, then obviously he doesn't like me because I'm too fat. And we're going to break up. And then I'm going to be homeless. And I'm going to lose my job. And my kids are going to get taken away. And oh, my God, I'm going to be homeless. And I might as well drink. Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't take long. So for me, what I do is I say, yo, 3 times to God, because it just puts the brakes on. When I say, yo, it reminds me, like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic who has been granted a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And as a result of that maintenance, which is nothing, what do I put in? An hour or two a day? Maybe 3 or 4 if I'm working with other girls. I drank for 8 to 12 hours a day, easy. And I'm going to complain about going to a meeting for an hour? Ooh, check me spiritually. You know, and so I try to say yo a couple times just to kind of get it. And then at some point during the day, I don't write my 10th step at night anymore because I think I'm getting older and I just get too sleepy. And so at some point during my day, I write about the day before and about what I did okay and what I need to change and where there can be growth and what bothered me. And the what bothered me stuff, man, that just gets to what's wrong with me and where the fear still is. And the fear is always wrapped so tight around those things that I love most. You know, and it's hard to let go. And I'm still sometimes like I struggle with the whole egomaniac with an inferiority complex thing because it's really easy for me to run up here or run down here. Because if I do that, I stay out of the middle. And the middle is where I'm actually going to connect with you and connect with you on the level of God and where I'm going to allow myself to be vulnerable and intimate with you and help you to see God and learn from you about God. And that's the level I need. But that's the level that I'm afraid of because I don't like emotions. But every day it gets a little bit better, you know. And then I brush my teeth again at night and I get down on my knees and I thank God. I thank God for everything that I have gotten in this program. Because every single thing I have ever looked for in booze or drugs or sex or Oreos or pound cake or shoes, all of it I found here. And I can use any of those things at any time that I want to try to fill that void for a little bit. Oh, I'm going to run around and do this. I'm going to run around and buy that. It's short-lived, you know. But when I sit down with another woman and we open up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and we read a paragraph and do what it says, the peace and serenity and certainty of God that I feel in my heart, ain't nothing booze can touch. You know, this program has made me into the woman I never knew I wanted to be. It's made me into the mother that I never thought I could be. And it's just made me into the human being. I don't know. Like, I just can't believe it. Because left to my own, with booze, I got the baseball bat and I'm going at your car. You know, I'm stealing your wallet and helping you to look for it and banging out your boyfriend in the bathroom while we're looking. That's how I roll. But with God, I am a woman of dignity and grace. I respect other people's relationships and I respect their personhood. And I demand similar respect. And I don't have unrealistic expectations of people anymore. I don't trust untrustworthy people anymore. You know? I don't know. So I guess all it's in. Then I go to bed and I actually go to sleep and I don't pass out anymore. You know, I fall asleep. I know, I'm kind of crazy. But all I'd say is if you're new or coming back and you don't know if you can do it for one more day. And if you don't believe in God, believe in me and believe that I believe in God. And if you don't have a God that's big enough, use mine, because my God is so big, it's crazy, crazy. And the more that will be revealed is God. That's all I got.